So there is no one way to get to the country. We believe that you can, where you are right now, begin to make the moves to get to the home that you desire. Okay? Changing your mindset, things like that. As you delight yourself in the Lord, He will give you the desires of your heart. So that is the first and foremost things that we want you to think about, is delighting yourself in the Lord and asking Him for what it is that you desire. Okay? Because if you're walking in His way, He will give you the desires of your heart.
Okay, so there's a running joke that earlier in the first hour, my husband mentioned that he lived in the country, he was homeschooled. I didn't find any of this out till years into our marriage. And I was like, are you serious? Because I didn't, when we first got married, I never even heard the word homeschool. I don't even know if I knew what it was. But he had the life where that, you know, the whole, you know, those bedtime, is it authors?
Uncle
Arthur's bedtime stories kind of experiences, you know, go out to the watermelon patch and pick one up and drop it, oops, by accident, and then have to eat it, you know, out there in the garden kind of thing, you know. Those were the experiences that he had. Was it a watermelon or?
You got married when you were
five.
Almost.
No, but in this picture, this is him in, he's born in Boston, South Boston, Virginia, right? Sorry. And that's just the life that he had. And homeschooled at the age of 4 or 5 years old and just having a beautiful experience out in the country. I was born in Bronx, New York. In the city, concrete jungle. I had a taste of country living when I went to visit my godmother in the summertime, and I went to Massachusetts. And my experience was like seeing a cat give birth to kittens, you know, and not really understanding what was going on, you know, as a little girl, or seeing cows just walking by, and, you know, and they're massive because I'm little. Seeing a sunflower for the first time in real life. I mean, that might not be a big deal to anyone else, but it was just like you only see them in cartoons, you know. It was huge, as big as my head, if not bigger. It was just like, this is beautiful. What is, you know, it was just an amazing experience. So that was a taste that he gave me, even though my husband as a child got the full meal.
So, like my mom.
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Ooh, like my wife was saying, yes, I was born in the country. And it was a wonderful experience. And one of the things that I tell my family about is how my godmother used to prepare chickens. And one of the things that traumatized me was actually seeing her. The kids might want to cover their ears. But actually catching a chicken and taking an axe and chopping his head off and watching the chicken run around like his head was just cut off. And so when people said that joke, I had a visual of what that really was like, and seeing the chicken flop around, and I was like, wow, I don't want any chicken anymore. And so it was a very traumatizing experience, but I did used to love to go out into our garden and pick cucumbers off the vine and pick tomatoes off the tomatoes plants and eat them right there as a young boy, and just run around and play. And that was part of my homeschooling experience when I was a kid. And so I didn't even really think about it until just maybe a year ago that I was actually homeschooled, up until about the first grade. And so when my wife said that she wanted to homeschool our kids about 10 years ago, I said, you wanted to do what? What is that? I didn't realize that I was even homeschooled. And I wasn't sure exactly what that was or how it was going to work, but I had confidence because my wife was a teacher, and she was a good teacher in the public school system, and that gave me a lot of confidence. Not that any mom needs those type of credentials to be a good homeschool teacher.
Amen.
Okay? Yeah, I'll let you interject in just a bit. But that was what I needed to even consider that, because I was concerned about the kids' academics. They were doing well in school, in public school. Our little ones, they were going to a daycare at the time, but our older ones, they were in, you know, middle school and junior high doing very well. And I wasn't so sure that I wanted to take them out of that regular way of life and such, but my wife, she didn't stop. She wanted to homeschool. And we were making it on two incomes, but so I was thinking two things. How are we going to do this on one income? And two, what's the kids' academic life going to look like afterwards? How do you do that? How do you structure that, right? So those are two concerns. But by and by, we made that work, and God made a way for it to work. You wanted to interject? I don't know. You were going to say something.
Oh, okay. First, I want to ask the kids, how many of you eat, I'm rewinding, how many of you eat fruit, tomatoes are fruit, things like tomatoes or cucumbers, have you ever had a chance to eat those straight off the vine or out of the garden? Yes? Do they taste the same? Have you ever had the fruit and vegetables from the grocery stores as well? Which one tastes better? The one from the garden? Yes. The one from the garden. Yeah. Anybody ever seen a chicken? Well, never mind. Okay. Just want to know what their experience is. I think a quick question. How many of you homeschool? Homeschool? Yes? Two, three? Anybody else? How many of you want to homeschool? When you have children, or, you know, if you have children now, you don't homeschool, but you want to homeschool. Or you want your grandkids. You do homeschool. You still want to homeschool them? I'm so busy homeschooling, I don't have time to homeschool, right? Okay. My credentials as a teacher in the public school hurt me. If you're a teacher, I've met a teacher already in public school, no disrespect, because I was there 6 years, just 6 years. But the training and so on, it actually hurt me because, it's kind of sad, but just recently I started diving a little bit deeper into true education.
Amen.
That phraseology, I mean, I can say it here and I can see the like, oh yeah. If I said it anywhere else, it's like, what true education? What's the rest of it? False? Well, I had to deprogram myself from what I was trained in order to do it God's way with my kiddos, if that makes sense. That was my only interjection.
Oh.
I think.
That was a good interjection.
Yeah. So for those of you who homeschool, I hope I didn't press anything wrong. Has this ever been your experience? Great, kids. Breakfast is out of the way. The kitchen is cleaned up. Let's start school.
Yay!
Honey, I'm home. How was your day today? Kids, how was school?
Oh, my. It's already 6:30. Time for dinner. Okay. Anybody have that experience, my homeschooling? Okay. So this... We'll have a crying session later, okay? You hear me? This sometimes often felt like my experience. Our homeschooling, it seems like we're belaboring that, but our homeschooling journey brought forth fruit that was preparing us for country living.
Okay, so we were homeschooling. We were in a home in the suburbs, and then we were in this apartment, and we'll share all that later. But it was conditioning us and preparing us. It was a gateway to understanding God's ideals for his people, which, of course, was leading us towards this country living concept. We had to start somewhere, right? We began in this journey educating ourselves and having kind of like these miniature reformation experiences, learning about, being more aware of media, media discernment became a thing, music discernment, dietary practices. We started learning about that, eight laws of health. That was kind of something very new. It's sad, but it's true. And this was our experience, that it was kind of a gateway into the country living. And we weren't perfect, but we changed as we grew.
Before we started homeschooling, every day was the same, going to daycare or a babysitter's house. When I found out that we were going to start being homeschooled by my mom, since I didn't really know what school meant, I thought that's what we had been doing all the time, since I didn't know where my older siblings were going every day.
So, being the eldest, I was obviously in school the longest, in public school the longest, all the way up to eighth grade. So I was rescued right before high school, and I was able to be with my family, and I've always appreciated that, because I hear horror stories from everyone that did go to high school, and I'm glad I bypassed that. But in school, I was always just like kind of a above average student. I just did my work, got through class. I was in like band, did the extracurricular, all that regular stuff. But when I was finally homeschooled, I was able to come out of my shell a little more, because I was always shy, or I was kind of more soft spoken. And every year, or every setting I was in with the new kids or new group of people, I decided to become more of myself, because I was actually quite goofy and very intelligent, and I wanted to let myself explore that area, and that helped me figure out what I want to do for my future career, or now.
Yeah, like my sister, I'm the second oldest, so I was in school second longest, or however you would say that. And it was definitely a culture shock going from public school to homeschooling. The main thing was that I had freedom to, like, actually explore and discover what I like to do, which is kind of weird. I learned that I love to write, I loved animals, I liked all these different things because of homeschooling, and, like, gates and doors were opened up for me. Another thing I think that was really important was that spiritual things really started to open up to me more. I actually began to focus on what it is that I actually believed. Like I mentioned, it wasn't until we got to the country that I found out what the gospel was. So, imagine this stage in my life, I'm just figuring out, like, oh, hey, Jesus is coming soon, and I should probably do something instead of just living life or whatever. So I really started to think about those things more seriously when I had time, when I had less distractions from being in public school.
I would just like to interject that the kids had been baptized before we moved to the country, and going through the regular church, you turn 12, 13 years old, you get baptized. That was just the process. But they actually started learning about Christ after we moved. Actually, not just them, but all of us started learning about Christ and building that relationship once we moved out.
So when I was 10 years old, 10 years ago, I didn't really understand what the concept of homeschooling. But I was in public school, fifth grade. I was doing good, all A's. But really, all I remember is that I wanted to, like, just eat and play. And so as we transitioned to homeschooling, That's what we did. At least I did. Our motto was like freedom and creativity. And I discovered, you know, playing with Legos and stop in animation and video editing. And eventually I got more into nature and then discovered gardening, which really I could only do once we moved out to the country.
And to touch on back on what my sister was saying, our spiritual life also, it's still maturing. I actually was baptized twice, once when I was younger, about like 12 or something. And then again, we had gone to mission trip to Dominican Republic, and I was also baptized then again. But, of course, as you get older, there's trials and things that test me, but I'm now getting, I'm still maturing, and it's getting stronger, my relationship with the Lord. But that was only possible because I was able to be with my family 24/7 and learn and get tested by the right people that would still love me either way. So, yeah, we were together a lot, and like we mentioned before, in apartments, and so a small living situation than what you would think a family of seven would be in. So we learned to be content with our space. We learned to share, and it's surprisingly enough, in real life, not too many people share easily. So when I was handing things, go ahead and take it. If I asked somebody else for something, they were not as easy to give, and I was really confused, but I still learned to do my part and share with others. And then also I was able to discover some gifts that were inside me, like cooking was a big one. I ended up being kind of a sous chef after my dad. And then now whenever I'm home, I'm a head chef, of course. But I do love cooking. I ended up going to culinary school afterwards for plant-based cooking. And I also got into natural hair and, you know, the using the natural oils and all that good stuff. I know you see now half of it's gone. I did shave some of it, but I'm having fun with that. And thank you. And teaching my brothers and sisters how to take care of our hair. And also music was a really big thing. Taught myself a few things on a few different instruments. And it's really good for your mind to just kind of explore that creativity and learning.
And while this is coming up,
that was our experience. That was my experience, the getting baptized over and over again, not understanding what this is all about. And in our journey, when we started homeschooling, then we started understanding, learning about righteousness by faith and all these things. And, you know, you don't work your way to heaven, and things like emotionalism that gets people sometimes to go get baptized and stuff like that. These are the things that we were learning, and the Lord was freeing us from some error that we had.
Real quick, I just want to interject. we're following an outline, so we have some things lined up. But as we're going along, we're just interjecting because things are coming to our mind that help to put everything together a little bit more. So we were never really financially stable, so we bounced around a lot from different homes and apartments and things like that. And so we started our homeschooling journey while we were both working. And living in a suburban house. And then once we started homeschooling and went down to one income, we had to move again and move to something that was a little more affordable. So that's kind of where we're picking up the story now, okay?
We moved to Sheffield Square apartment, and our mom continued to homeschool.
Okay, also an interjection. So every time we moved to a different house, I think we maybe changed our homeschooling, our name, like twice or three times to like the street name that we lived on. So like all of our different like diplomas, our high school diplomas, like say something different from what school we graduated from, which is funny.
So I liked homeschooling because I could be closer to my parents and my siblings, and I made friends with other homeschoolers.
So while we were at this apartment that Alyssa mentioned, we learned we actually started learning about agriculture. There, I don't know what year it was, probably 2012 or 13. Y'all may have heard of it. Was like a week-long agricultural conference, but it was all online. And they had all these speakers coming on talking about Adventism in agriculture. And the whole week, we just listened to it. The kids may have been just getting it by osmosis, but I was just glued to the, you know, the internet listening. It was just all audio. And it's probably a lot of people here that were running this whole program, but I had no clue who they were. And it was just intriguing to me. And I thought, yes, I want to get out into the country. We got into listening to Dave Westbrook. Get show of hands, those of you who know Dave Westbrook. Okay, we got one, two, three. Okay, a lot, good amount of you heard of Dave Westbrook. We started listening to his teachings and his seminars, and it was interesting. While he was talking about country living, he actually, we were learning a lot about spiritual growth from what he was talking about. A lot of his videos were about herbs and plant-based cooking, building shelters, how to start a fire, these types of things. And little did we know that God was preparing us for a crisis that was about to happen through his information.
So, through listening to Dave Westbrook, of course, the next request after homeschooling came a few years later was, I want to move to the country. And it was echoed by my children. Daddy, can we move to the country? I'm just getting used to homeschooling. I'm trying to adjust to working off of one income. This is where I am, and I'm thinking I'm doing okay. You know, hey, we're working this thing out here. We're balancing. You know, just settle down, weirdos. let's just maintain. But we, you know, by and by, I started to listen to the Dave Westbrook lessons as well. My wife signed us up for a class. We began to listen and take in all that he was saying. And I was no stranger to country living at all. My dad was a literature evangelist. He believed strongly in the health message and in country living. And he always talked about moving to the country and wanting to move back to Virginia. We had moved from Virginia to California, where I was raised, and but he always wanted to move back home. He's always talking about going back home. So here my wife comes with, I want to move to the country. Now, my thought about moving to the country
is up there on the flat.
Oh yeah. Yeah, my thoughts of moving to the country had everything to do with, okay, so we're moving to the country, we're going to need, based on what Dave is saying, we're going to need 20 acres minimum. 10 to 20 acres, right? And so on this 10 to 20 acres, I'm not building a house because I don't know how to build a house. Neither do I have the money to build a house. But we're going to need a nice house on the acreage. It needs to have all these slopes. It needs to have this. It needs to have that. I'm going to need a tractor. I want a nice truck. I want to make sure the land is fenced. And so with this information, I started searching, right? I started searching. Well, we're going to get some more of that in the third hour. But I started searching and seeing some of the prices in Texas where we were staying, anywhere remotely around Houston was exorbitant. And I said, okay, yeah, we can move to the country after I make my first million. And so little by little, my mind started to change about how this was going to be possible. But I had great anxiety about even thinking about moving to the country. we passed out some fear cards. Did you guys get a chance to write down any of your fears?
Raise your hand if you have. Raise your hand if you have any fears about moving to the country, or before you got out there, you had fears. Okay, like Okay, couple. You want
to take that? Yeah. So, who wants to share one of their fears? You want to share a fear?
For my husband, it's employment. He mm-hmm. could be you. He feels all the same way about everything that you just said. Yeah. And for me, it's I don't have any overt fears except about midnight some nights. I'm thinking, I don't know what to do. I don't know. I don't have the know-how to do it. Mm-hmm. So, those are that's my fear.
Okay. Know-how. Any fears? Yes?
Mine is not quite my own fear. It's fear that other people are putting in me. What if you get sick and you have an emergency, hospital or not closed? I think they are putting fear in my mind that I didn't have.
Exactly. And we got some of that from our in-laws. How close is the closest hospital going to be? What happens if the kids get sick? What are you going to do? Right? How close is the closest store? Any other fears?
I love nature, like I shared with your wife, as a teacher to myself. Hey. But I love nature without the animals. I'm afraid of snakes and you name it, lizards and everything. I told my husband last night that as long as it is all paved, I have no problem. My daughter says, Mommy, this is not going to happen. Then finally my husband said, okay, let's compromise. Okay, you can, you know, pave some of it. But I said, I'm not good at, you know, gardening. I never done that. I have black thumbs. I don't know how to do anything. But, you know, it's kind of fearful to me.
Yeah. And those are all valid fears and concerns.
That was also my concern, that my husband would be away for because of the commute, and we just won't be together as a family as much as we really would like to be. So I can relate to that.
So just to speak on our parents, so they cared a great deal about us as a couple and about their grandkids. And they just wanted to make sure that we were taking care of them and that we kept everything in perspective and in mind before we made such a big move. So in looking for a place, we made sure that we were close to a small town that had all the modern conveniences that we needed, that there was a hospital there, that there was storage there within driving distance, so we wouldn't have to drive an hour to get to anywhere that was necessary for us to live or survive, or in case of emergencies, we had something that was close enough so we can get to an emergency vehicle, get to us if necessary. Okay, so that was in our first move, that's what we looked for. But just to touch on my perception of country living, when we first got into it, I was overwhelmed by the idea. And that was because I was leaning solely upon what I could do. I was not trusting in God at the time. I was not saying, Lord, you see what the desires of our hearts are. Please provide for us. Open a way. I wasn't doing that. And it took some time for me to get there.
So our kids are going to share some of their fears that they had as well.
So one of my fears was rats. Well, that was after we moved to the country, because they like run around inside sheds and stuff, and that was kind of scary.
My fear was tornadoes.
For me, my major fear was that I thought country living would be boring compared to city living. We mentioned this place called City Center. It's like, you know, the place where you have your stores and your restaurants and your lights and music and, you know, just that very stimulating, like, oh, this is exciting kind of thing. And I saw that and I was like, I don't want to leave this, you know, to go to a country where there's nothing except for a cow maybe. And so that was my concern, but God really worked on my heart so that later on when I would go to the city center place or city whatever, I lost the desire to be there anymore. I was like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this. Let's get out of here.
So a fear of mine was being far away from friends. I mean, we didn't have a ton either way, but like, because we're kind of friends to each other, there's five of us kids, so. But that was a concern of mine, not being able to either go out to them if they had like a birthday party or something, or if we wanted to like invite them over. No one wants to drive an hour and a half to their friend's house on like a daily basis, so.
Did you have any fears? No. He was a young teenager and fearless.
So, earlier I mentioned that we learned from Dave Westbrook's seminars and teachings and so on about how to move to the country and what to do and survival type methods and so on because of the Christ, and it helped prepare us for the crisis that was to come. And so basically what happened was my daughter and I were in a car accident, and the car was totaled, and we had to buy a new car. And getting into this new car, it causes strain on our finances. And so we pretty much had to just keep... We tried our best to hold on as long as we could, and eventually we just had to move. Financially, we just couldn't handle where we were and the new car payment. And we had a lot of friends from homeschool conventions came in and just poured into us. It's amazing what people have been through, and then when you're going through it, they can help you. And that's what happened. It's like you think you're the only one. Whenever you go through a crisis, you think, I'm the only one that is going through this. But apparently, many people have been through similar situations. And someone gave us the advice to move to a state park. A state park. And so that's what we did. We decided to move to a state park and save up to get ourselves out to the country.
So talk about humbling. Talk about humbling. Hold on, I don't know if you guys can see that. So, I was not for this at all. I'm just going to pause just for a minute. Everybody's been camping before, right? Have you ever been camping long term? Have you ever had to go to work and still be camping? I'm going to let that sink in for a little bit, because that's what I had to do, is let this sink in. The reason being is that I promised my family that the next time we move, we were moving to the country. Be careful what you promise your family. Okay? Yes, I had to keep my word. I had to keep my promise. Because before we moved to the apartment, actually there was a request to move to the country. And we ended up moving to this apartment first. And so I said, okay, look, next time we move, we're going to move to the country. So, so that was it. We moved to this state park reluctantly on my part, and that's where we're going to pick up the rest of the story.
So I got a little taste of the country when our family moved to the state park, and at the state park I learned how to build fires and forts, and learned about wild animals, and we had lots of exploration and adventure.
And yeah, honestly, I'm sure this was a stressful time for my parents, but for me, I know for my siblings, it was like the funnest time of my life. Because like I'd never really been camping before, you know, so like here we are for this long-term camping trip, like let's do this, you know. And it was incredibly educational. Like my brother said, we got to build things, we got to learn about wildlife, we got to just, it was so cool. And it really, I think it really helped us to prepare us for when we did do country living. We were more experienced with, like, you know, getting our hands dirty, not being afraid to do all kinds of stuff. So it was a real blessing to be there for that time.
Honestly, I was right there with my kids. It was awesome. I loved it out there. I felt so free. It was unreal. To get up every morning to fresh air. If you notice, it looks like windows, but it is completely mesh screens. Yeah, screens. It's like the screen outside of your window. Remove the window. And you just wake up to fresh air, right? That's the A, new start. You come out, you get your sunshine. There's no words that can express how beautiful it was out there. And there was a nature center that was out there. So they had live animals, and it was awesome. And my friend that told us, you know, just go to the state park, tell your kids it's the adventure of a lifetime. I mean, she really, really helped me to change my mind about the whole thing. Because I could have been like, oh, woe is me. But it was like, this is an adventure. We're homeschooling at the park, guys. This is what we're doing. And we continue. There was one moment, I have to share this moment. There was one moment I was feeling a little down, a little stressed. And I stepped outside and I just looked up. I don't know if you've ever seen these types of birds. I don't even know what type they are, but they were white, and they flocked together in big groups, and they just came and flew and stopped. You know, I see you shaking your head. Do you know what I'm talking about? What are they called? Say it again. Egrets?
Cranes?
Okay. They yes. It's like they all came literally and stopped right over our cabin, and I just looked up, and they stayed right there, and they swayed back and forth, and it's like they did a dance, and the sun glistens off of their wings so that it changes, and it, you know, like it's kind of a shimmer, and then it goes dull, and then the shimmer again, and they did a dance, and it felt like eternity, and I felt like the Lord was saying, I'm right here. I love you so much. Here's a little show for you. And you know, all the kids were watching. I think we had cell phones at the time. We got a picture. I deleted it. I feel so sad. And after a while, they just stopped and then flew away. And I felt revived again. And I've heard stories like that. He does that. He brings animals to just bring just a peace to your life. And while we were out there, we continued country. We continued searching. Dave, we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but Dave says, you know, be in the area that you want to live in, and that's what we did. We just started searching. It was still far from his job, but we started searching, and because of what we learned from his website, when we went to the different homes to talk to the people, or when we were talking to realtors, we felt so educated. So what side is the slope and the, what, I don't even know what I'm saying, but I use the terminology, you know, is there well water? Is there,
is there a natural spring water?
Is there natural, yeah, is the door facing the east? We wanted the sun to, and we were just using all the technical terms, how many acreage, is it clear, da, 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 stuff we didn't know before. And we used all the terms, we felt very confident, and we could tell that we got a little bit more respect, you know, and we got more information than if we had just known nothing, you know, we could have been taken advantage of. So we do appreciate, while you may not be able to follow all of the aspects of what he teaches, you might not be able to get everything perfectly, he still gives a nice foundation for you to be able to just follow, like, based on your personal abilities.
So during our experience, I did understand what was going on because I was older, and so my parents would talk to me about some things, so I understood like the background. But I
try to be a good example to my younger brothers and sisters on our attitude and how we were going to take the situation. Even with, I mean, we didn't mention that this was in December, so it was also winter. We were outside for a month in the winter time, and that, yeah, it was okay. It wasn't the worst because, I mean, it was still Texas. Texas doesn't truly have, like, snow or anything like that. We all, you know, we all slept together, nice and snug. That's why I talked about the small spaces for seven people. So when we visit people, or, oh, we only have one room, that's plenty. Like, we could all fit in that one room together. It's fine. And then, of course, I was talking how I usually would cook for the family. So now my methods and kitchen skills had to transfer to an outdoor setting. And my brother, of course, he was learning how to build a fire, and we kind of figured out how to do one that were, it looked like a stove, like with a piece of wood in the back, and it kind of, we had like a little, it was cool, it was really cool. So I would, he would get up super early, make the fire, then I would come up after him, and then I would start making food. And one day I learned how to make camp bread, which is like this really cool little recipe for just like a easy bread to put over fire. And I started going to my chef mind, and I decided to make a pie. So I made a really large batch of it, and I found some fruit and like canned peaches, and I made peach cobbler, I made apple pie, and like a shepherd's pie. And so we had like a little dinner later on, and we had a few days like that. But instead of making it, we don't have any food, I just ran with it and see what we could create out there. So, yeah.
So needless to say, coming home was an adventure on the weekends, and we'd go hiking and things like that, and it was a lot of fun. And like my wife said, it was really preparing us for our next home. Because eventually, after a short stint staying, going back to our parents for a couple of weeks, we found a place. God blessed us with a country home out in Belleville, Texas. And this home was built in 1941. But because, like I was telling you earlier, the surroundings of it, it was a house that we rented, and it was on an acre of land that we rented, but it sat on 100 acres that the landlord gave us access to. They were running cows on the 99, we call it the back 99 acres, and we could explore all the acres back there. Now, this house, It was a three bedroom, if you will, really two, with all the other formals. But compared, can we step back? Where's the thing? But compared to our previous home, it was a mansion, right? It actually had a bathroom. No bathroom. It had a kitchen. No kitchen. We did have electricity here. There were glass in the windows. No glass here. But there was glass here, right? Yeah, we couldn't open it. No, we could open the windows. We could open the windows. I have it. What? Oh, the windows were nailed shut. We had to unscrew the windows so we can get some fresh air in the house. However, the house was not insulated. So because of our previous home, we'll go back to our previous home, we were used to that because air would just fly straight in. And we'd have to insulate ourselves by hanging up our jackets in front of these screen windows to keep the cold air out at night. Plus, we had warm bodies to keep ourselves warm. And believe it or not, staying here, we probably grew, no pun intended, we grew closer to each other more than we probably even wanted to at the time. But because of this experience, we really became a very, very tight-knit family. More tight-knit than we were previously. We were close, but we became even closer. We began to trust each other more. We came to depend on each other more. More qualities came out, and the kids were more helpful as a result. So when we moved to our next home, Thank you. We moved to our next home, everybody would work together as a team and getting the property ready to go, mowing lawns and doing chores around the house. And I have to say that if it wasn't for our experience at the state park, this would not have been an option for us. This house would not have been an option. I would have looked at this and laughed, which I actually did when I found it online. I looked at it and laughed, and I said, honey, let's go check this one out. And we were there for 2.5 years. So it became an oasis and a place where we learned about true country living.
We had a lot of sweet memories there. The home was old. You know those little cartoons where, you know, you step out of the home, you slam the door behind you, and then the whole house falls down into rubble. That's kind of how it felt like. It's just at any moment, you know, you touch a window and one of the pieces of wood would just swing off and just kind of like, whoa, you know. But it had sturdy structure. I mean, 1940s, right? It's still there. But it was extremely peaceful. We were on a back road. We saw a car once every few hours. It was just really, really peaceful. I actually enjoyed being in a tent on the outside of the home and just sleeping out there under the stars more than being inside. But it was a very peaceful home surrounding. My son got to watch the neighbor's cattle. He got the neighbor that owned leased the land paid him for watching the cattle and counting the cattle and, you know, looking out for it. A lot of paid him to fix the fencing out there. Our two little ones explored and saw wolves in the distance. And was it wolves or coyotes?
Coyotes.
And you saw what else? Hawks and just all kinds of beautiful things that they got to experience pretty much for the first time in their life. So it was really a sweet experience.
Interjection?
It's my only interjection. I just wanted to, like, just a reminder with the cabin, that was a training ground for us, but it helped us to think differently about what country life really was. We were thinking, you know, 100 acres, four wheelers, big house, it'd be a blast. But that's not what country living is about, and that's what the quote said earlier: an expensive dwelling, elaborate furnishings, display, luxury, and ease do not furnish the conditions essential to a happy, useful life. And so God was trying to show us that from going from the cabin to this next house, that it's not, the point is not to be luxurious in the country, but to have the experience of what Jesus went through, learning and getting closer to God. So if that was your picture of, you know, a nice country home, maybe you should shift it first. And if you have the money to do all that, that's great. But make sure you're focusing on the true, what your true focus is in the country, which is to have peace and learn of God through nature.
Yeah, I remember moving to the country, a whole new world of discovery opened up for us. I remember one sweet memory that we had, not only having our awesome donkey, we'll find out his name later, but we got to raise animals, which I'd never done before. The most I had was like guinea pigs, fish, you know. There was one time I was doing my math in the dining room, and I hear this commotion outside. My siblings are running out, like, all right, they're here, whatever. And I find out that our neighbor who is leasing the land for his cows was bringing his bull. And we'll show you a picture of him later, I hope. Oh, no, wait, go back.
There he is,
that guy. His name is Rolo. And so he was bringing him, and I was, like, so excited. I ran out. We got to watch him, and I got to see this bull for the first time in my life. I'd never seen, you know, these kind of animals, like, up close and personal before. And it's like, this is... It was a beautiful experience, like just the freedom to discover new things every day with no hindrances. It's just the way life should be.
One quick interjection. When we used to go and explore those back 99, at first it was a little scary because you have these huge beasts that are back there, right? these cows that we've never really had interaction with before. But once you start seeing them having babies, you know, and once you see that that they're just so close, you could just hop over the fence. And that's what we did. We hopped over the fence, we just go back there, and we walk right among them. We walk right in between them. These are thousands of pounds. The bull is like from here to the wall right there. He didn't... That's about as close as we got to the bull. That gives us just enough space to go, you know, ole or whatever. And I just want to tell a story about that bull, because Rolo is a powerful beast. And there was another pasture right next door. And these two bulls came to... And my son and I, we were out there mending a fence, because he had already dug up the fence. And we were going out to go mend the fence. And so Rolo, where's Rolo? Go to the next slide. Rolo, he doesn't have any horns. They cut the horns so they don't hurt nobody, as if they needed horns to hurt somebody. Rolo stands about yay tall. Okay? Yeah, was he taller? He's about yay tall. He's about yay wide. Okay? I don't know if he's wider than that. He's about yay wide. And so, again, Keith and I, we were probably about from here to there when we were mending the fence, and we hear, we look up, and Rolo is going like this. He's telling us to get out of the way. We look at him, he's looking at us, he goes like this, and we're like, okay. So we move out of the way, we got to back up. And he's walking towards this fence, and there's another bull on the other side of the fence. And these bulls come together, and they touch noses, and all of a sudden, Rolo lurches at this other bull. And the other bull, he backs up, and he comes back. And when Rolo lurches forward, you could see every sinew of his muscle flinch. And I was like, oh my goodness, what a powerful, you know, beast this is. And we're just feet away from him, and he's gentle as I don't know what. But you can see it's like meekness. It's so much power under control. He didn't see us as a threat. But he was always protecting the other cows out there. He even protected the donkeys that were watching over the cows, because the cattlemen put a donkey out there to watch over the calves. That's who keeps the calves in order, which is a really interesting dynamic that I never even thought about. So these were some of the things that we were learning when we first got to this first place. Josh?
So the country gave us an atmosphere of peace and freedom, and after a while, we acquired a dog, chickens, and a donkey, and, our donkey's name was Bud.
All the chickens had names.
All the chickens had names.
Some of the names real quick. I don't remember.
Okay. So, there's Boss, there's Hawk, there was Gray, Jenny Hen, Sakati, no, Glow, Charlie, and Speckles. Oh yeah. So one time we went away from to run an errand at the store, and we left the chickens out. So then we come back, and our chicken named Hawk was standing by a fence, and there was a hawk just sitting on the fence, just looking at her, and it's like, that's kind of weird, you didn't get eaten, but yeah, that's funny.
The end.
But there were many times where the kids had to play protector over the chickens, and one of the things that we got chickens because my wife, she wanted chickens. That was one of the things that she always wanted. The house came with the chicken house that was sitting just off to the side of one of the barns. And so a neighbor drove by, a gentleman who drove by almost every day in this red pickup truck. And he happened to stop one day and he introduced himself. My wife said she wanted some chickens. He said, oh, okay, I have some chickens. He brought us over a dozen chickens. Here's some chickens. How much? No, just take them. We don't eat chickens. We didn't eat eggs. But wife wanted chickens. Lord must have known she wanted some chickens. Neighbor brought chickens. We didn't pay for them. And we had a whole brood of chickens who had more chickens. And we got to learn how to take care of chickens. My son even hatched, helped to hatch them and care for them while they were still in the eggs. And that was a pretty cool experience.
While we were out there, I became acquainted with a myriad of different animals, both wild and domestic. And I learned much of what I know now from living in the country. And less distractions whetted my appetite for reading.
Now, if you put a book in front of this girl, she devours it within, a few days. And she just goes from book to book to book to book. And we can hardly keep up with... We have to actually be careful what kind of books are in the house, because she will read anything that comes in there.
Okay, so about this time we were learning about the SDA, the Seventh-day Adventist Pioneers. We never learned anything about them we just didn't
know about the history of our church. And as we were learning about the history of our church, they mentioned Country Living, and we were just kind of getting more and more pieces were coming together. When we were at this first house that we showed, we started actually studying at home with a small group of people, and the Bible was just opened up to us. We would study under the tree, a large pecan tree that was out in the back, and we would study every Sabbath and just learn so much. And the atmosphere really did play a huge role in how the Word was opened up to us.
Yeah, and guys probably remember when I mentioned that when we started homeschooling, I started learning more about God. And then I mentioned that when we moved to the country is when I actually first began to learn about the gospel. And so that happened. I really did grow even closer to God. And at this time, I was working in the city still, going to work with my dad. And I would get to come home to the safe haven in the country, away from the noise, from the vanity, and whatever, city life. So that was a blessing. And later on, when we moved to our current residence, I got to start working with my favorite animals out in the country, which was also a blessing because now I'm out there all the time and I can just get the full experience of country living.
So after we actually got to that first yellow house, our first country home, I was only able to spend the first 6 months having country life, but at that time, that was the end of my high school year, so I ended up going to culinary school, like I mentioned before, so I only got to spend 6 months out there with them, but I always had the opportunity to go back home and have that getaway from city life. I moved to Austin, Texas, so it was like an hour and a half drive to where my parents were, so it wasn't too bad. So like every other weekend, I would go out to visit my parents, and I can remember the first time I went to go visit them. It was really funny because I did not tell them at all that I was coming. Mind you, I'm like 19 years old. I just had my first car, and so I drove out during the day and all the way to Houston, hung out with some friends. And then about when nightfall came, I finally decided to actually drive out to the country, and it was about 9 p.m., and I went to go knock on the door. They don't expect anybody to come out right now to their house in the middle of the night, and I knocked on the door, and my brother, Keith, decided to come to the door with a bat,
because they think this is their first intruder or something. And I was like, guys, it's me. He's like, me who? I was like, guys, it's me. Me who? I'm like, Brianna. And they bust open the door, and there was a bunch of tears, and all the kids are crying. I was crying, and of course my dad, he was crying because his daughter finally came home. And it was just really a really nice time to just see that my family still loves me, and that I can come back anytime I want, and still have a home out in the country.
Okay, at this point, thanks, Bree, for sharing that story. Everybody, go ahead and stand up. Everybody, stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Reach up into the sky or out forward and just kind of stretch, stretch, stretch. We're going to be taking a break soon, but I just know that it's hard on the body to be sitting for so long. You kids are doing such a great job, and I have a question for you. Don't sit down. Quick question. Would y'all rather live in the country and not be able to plant a garden, or would you rather live in the city and grow as much fruits and vegetables as you'd like? One of my kids came up with this question. That's a tough one. I know, she's frowning like, what in the world? I hope I never have to experience that option. City, grow all the fruits and vegetables you want. Country, not be able to plant a garden. Say it. Say it again. Y'all know which one? Huh? Country? Yeah. And then where are you going to get your fruits and vegetables from?
The guy with the chickens.
The guy with the chickens, right. Yes. It's a trick question. Yeah, just get it from the neighbor. All right. Those of you, everyone standing, how many, go ahead and sit down if you are garden already, if you're gardening already. You have a garden.
What constitutes a garden?
Well, you know what?
we're
you want to define?
That counts.
Just, yes, garden meaning growing something from, and it doesn't have a mother. Yeah. All right, for those still standing, how many of you want to garden? You want to start gardening? Sit down if you want to start gardening. Sorry. Awesome. You want to start gardening? We have a resource for you, and we'll share it with you at the end of our session. So we're going to fast forward through this experience. We watched it. Raise your hand if you ever heard of Back to Eden. Okay, a lot of you. Right. We stumbled upon that, I don't know how, and we watched it, and then Casey said, that's it, let's start a garden. Because we were out at that house for a little bit, and we just weren't doing anything. We just were talking. And they said, let's start a garden. And so Keith O'Neill started the garden. And it was a little plot, and we started growing things, and it was a sweet experience. At this point, I was able to become mobile and get out into the community. As my son mentioned earlier, I joined a Bible study, and I started meeting people and and started making networking and making connections. And this was going to be very crucial for the next crisis that was on its way.
So there are many blessings that we experienced. Some were seen and some were not seen. But hindsight is always 20/20. We want you guys to think about some of your own personal living parables. And if you can write these down, or just take some time during the conference where you just kind of meditate and just see how God is leading in your life. Okay? Just try and recognize those things, because things that we went through, we didn't see it in the time that it was happening. But when we look back at it, it was like, wow, God was doing this, God was doing that, and preparing us in different ways. And we still don't know where he's taking us. This is just one step in our journey. We're just glad to share it. So even some things that seem awful, if you can pull a blessing out of those things that seem like a terrible experience, you can see how God is still leading you. I've even heard how God, in a recent podcast I was listening to, we were all listening to actually, called How They Did That, or Why They Did That. The gentleman was talking about how God used Satan to discourage David, and how it was turned around for David to be a better king. He was already anointed king, but some of the things that he went through, God put him through so he could even be better. But he couldn't do that himself. He allowed Satan to have his way in certain instances to discourage him, so that David, by those experiences, would grow. It's a really interesting podcast. I can't put it in the words that the speaker did, but it's very interesting. You guys should check it out.
We're going to let our kids share a few things about their experiences. Joshy, Keith, y'all can come up. Casey. So you got a card that had you to write down the blessings and the living parables, which are kind of like object lessons. Anybody want to share anything that they wrote on their card? Any blessings that you experienced out in nature or just in the course of your life? Lessons that you learned? But go ahead and share. We're going to share some of the living parables that we experienced out in the country.
Seeing one of our hens sitting on all nine of her chicks at the same time, even though she wasn't a very big hen, would sometimes remind me of how our Heavenly Father protects and guides us all at the same time with plenty of room to spare. As it says in Psalm 71:4, He shall cover thee with His feathers, and under His wings shalt thou trust.
For me, my living parable was being out in the garden and pulling weeds one day. I suddenly had an impression that, wow, this is what God is doing in my life. I'm like this plant that I'm growing here. I'm trying to grow some arugula that my son planted, but I'm out here, I'm weeding. And I'm weeding around these plants so that they can grow stronger. And every weed that I'm pulling out, whether tough or easy, is just like what Christ is doing with me, pulling things out of my life so that I can grow.
For me, there was one time when Keith and I were weeding out in the garden, my favorite hobby, and we noticed how easy it was. It may seem kind of obvious, but how much easier it was to pull out the weeds when they were young, just small little things, versus when they were big and ugly and, you know, had their roots deep into the ground. And so it made me think about, especially with children, and just with any habits that we start to form in our lives, it's easier to root it out of our lives at the beginning before it takes deep root and starts to, fester too much. And so I thought that was a really important lesson for me to keep in mind.
Sometimes we have, one of the things that I learned, sometimes out in the garden that we have now, we have these weeds, and they have huge, like prickly thorns on them. Anybody ever seen this in the garden? And they're painful, and you want to rip it out. You want to just take your hand and just grab it out, but it will be very painful to do. And it reminds me of the big old ugly sins that are in our life, right? And we want to remove it, but it's painful, and we don't want to deal with it. But I noticed that, and when we leave it there, it gets bigger and bigger, and it seems even more daunting. But with these little weeds, when you put a glove on, a sturdy glove, and you yank at it, it comes out like it was never even in the ground. The roots are so shallow. And it just reminds me that if we just make an effort to remove that sin, that thing that's in our life, we just make an effort to just, you know, give it a go and just get rid of it. It can be removed through with Christ. It can be removed and just taken out of our lives.
So sometimes our donkey would escape out of his pen, and so when we found him, like, down the road or something, he would come back with us willingly. And the lesson that I learned from this is that if we, like, wander away from Christ, and he tries to bring us back to him, then we should go back with him willingly.
So, for my living parable, so while we were back at the cabin in the national park, we were out playing one day, because I was still playing, I was still young, and there were some fallen logs, and I decided to, you know, balancing, walk across it, and I was really confident in my balancing skills. Unfortunately, I still slipped off, to my surprise, and I fell into the brush, but it wasn't super deep as I thought it would be. I thought I was going to be falling for a while, there'd be thorns, but it didn't turn out that way, and my brothers and sisters came to help me up, and it reminded me of my walk in life. I may think I have it together all by myself, but I really don't. I need help from the Lord, and even if I do fall, it's never too far, and he can still come pick me back up. And with the help of my family, friends, there's so someone there to support you. Yeah.
So something I've learned, or my living parable, is that actually I learned this from reading a book on orchards. And so a piece of land can be stripped completely bare, and it may seem that life there is, like, no longer possible. It could be dusty and just nothing there. But with rain and sunlight and seeds that are blown in by the wind and dropped by various creatures, the seeds will start to grow. And beginning with small plants just covering the ground, the land will eventually grow and produce strong fruit-bearing trees, and life will flourish there again. So the lesson in that is that when you feel that there's no more hope and your soul fears barren, the Word of God, which would be the light, made effective by the Holy Spirit, which would be the rain, can, in your life, quicken the seeds, bring them to life. And those seeds are planted by God's messengers, His servants. And those will bring new life to your soul and will develop your character. And as your character develops, eventually you will bring forth good fruit and can bless others with it.
So we had some living parables, and then we also had some just basic lessons learned in this process of getting out to the country or being in the country. One lesson, my Joshua,
he taught us that your character depends on the seed you choose to plant. Do y'all agree with that?
There was a bird at the first house that we showed you that would keep on flying and hitting itself into the window. Has anybody ever seen that before? It's a weird phenomenon. You have? Okay.
It just kept flying from a branch on a tree, and then it would knock into the window, I guess with its beak or what have you. And then our son, Keith, told us that John, was it Brother Dysinger? He taught you that sometimes birds have a defense mechanism, and they're kind of trying to help me out. Like,
it's like during mating season, and so they see a rival, but it's really them in their reflection. So they're trying to attack this rival. I guess they're not smart enough to realize that it's just them. But
so, yeah, so it's the reflection in the window, and we didn't know at the time, but we just literally learned it a week or so ago. And so while we were talking about it, Brianna came up with this thought that your greatest rival is yourself.
So whether it's a gardening issue or whether it's just trying to get out into the country or some other thing that's going on in your life, sometimes we can be the obstacle with the fears or with the expectations that are just way too high and unrealistic, or maybe not even aligning with what God would have for us. Our greatest rival can be ourselves. Honey?
You ever heard this one? Don't burn down a tree to kill a snake. I did.
Next.
I'll tell you that story later.
Yes, come see us at our booth.
Alyssa tells us that she learned that animals can smell your fear. They can sense your fear. And so if you don't want them to attack you, then you need to not be afraid of them and show them who's boss. For example, a dog that just showed up on our property. Her name, we named her Charity. And we didn't know, but it's a blue heeler mix with a... what, pit bull, blue heeler mix, and it was just nipping at them, and we had to put it in its place. But after a while, it was their best friend. It would follow them wherever they would go, and I felt safe when they would go out into the acreage because this dog would just protect them. So don't show your fear. And as my son was, I didn't get to share the story about the mulch. We had a truck just dump some mulch off on our property, but as our son was getting into gardening, and he's ordering books to buy seeds, and you have tons and tons of pictures of different fruits and vegetables, and he was like, this is ridiculous, why don't we have this in our stores? You know, there's like several types of cantaloupes and several types of different, you know, melons or what have you, and I'm not going to mention the stores, but the supermarkets only have like one. And he just said, we need to broaden our horizons when it comes to food, or I'm paraphrasing. That was what he realized. So we experienced. Any of you have, what is this that's on the screen? Yep. Jackfruit. Show of hands, have you ever had jackfruit? Okay. So it makes you want to get to heaven, right? Oh man, jackfruit is absolutely delicious. And we experienced it. Yeah, it's what's inside of that. It's extremely ugly. I actually covered it up with a towel because I was scared every time I walked in my kitchen. But it's so delicious. but that's what we experienced for the first time being out there. Okay, can you help me out, Jackie? Did you want to do yours? Okay.
I don't know. One major lesson that I learned just from this whole experience was that it's a lot easier to go, like, we're going to go through trials, right? And it's just inevitable. But it's a lot easier to go through it as a family when you're working together and not bickering and fighting and things like that. And, you know, we find that's true working in the garden. When we work together, we get things done a lot faster. So just one major lesson that I've learned from this whole experience.
I was able to come out of my little 7-day Adventist bubble, and when I joined the Bible study, I met a lot of people from other faiths, and I learned, I know you probably already know this, this is just my personal experience, I learned that people of other faiths love the Lord more than I thought they did, and way more than I did. It was a beautiful experience to meet people of different faiths and to see how much they loved the Lord and how much they loved people. And when we share, or we didn't share the next crisis that comes up in our life at this house that we're in, this comes in very handy, the love of these people. But I learned that working in the garden also is very challenging if you don't know what you're getting into. My son grew like so much greens, I don't even know. What do you do with greens? I didn't even know what to do. I just chopped them and cooked them. But you have to know what you're getting into. You have to know what you want to eat, and you have to know what, so it lets you know what you want to plant.
the community.
Okay, so one lesson that Keith O'Neill experienced was that ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Matthew 7:7. Folks in the country are usually very kind. They're giving, they're accepting, they're generous, and they're very sharing people. And you just have to ask. And sometimes you don't even have to ask. And if you need tools or advice, you're sure to get it. And they will even share their produce with you. Sometimes we're bringing something that we grew in our garden, and we're bringing it to somebody, and then someone's running across the street to bring us something from their garden, and the other person that we're giving the stuff to is saying, here, you know, look, we're giving you something. We go back home with more than what we left the house with, and it's an absolute blessing.
So we're going to bring this session to a close before we get into our third session. But again, there is no one way to get to the country. Okay, that's the lesson here. And to trust the Lord to guide you and take you where He wants you to go.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.